3511 User Experience. Today we're going to focus on prototyping and rapid application development, which is the next chapter after the developing for UX. So in this chapter, we're really going to look at what we're going to put in front of people. The idea is that we've created something from, we've elicited requirements, so we understand what users sort of want. We then have modeled that and tried to get that into a more structured format so that we can better understand and present it to software engineers and present it as well to users. Now we want to show users mock-ups of the kind of things and the kind of interactions that we think they would actually get. So we're translating from the conceptual and we're getting closer and closer to implemented reality. Okay. Now these prototypes are low fidelity prototypes at one end and high fidelity prototypes at the other end. And the difference between these two different kinds of prototypes is purely, it's a spectrum, it's purely the level of input that's required by a UXer to create them and the level of input that's expected from a user to evaluate them, and so generally, and change them, of course. And so generally, it's these two things play together. So what you typically get is low-fi, low quality, low-fi fidelity prototypes are very minimal. They're very easy for the UXer to build because they're pretty much just drawn on bits of paper, etc. They shouldn't look like they're anything, and they should look like they can easily be trashed. And then there's a lot of input expected from the user to refine them. As you move up the hierarchy, at the high fidelity point, you then get something that looks, that's had lots of input from the UXer, that looks pretty much like what you would expect, that what you're going to expect to get from a from an implemented version, certainly an implemented first version of the work. And further, what you're also going to get is that you'll get very little input then, very little change request from the user. Okay, so those things kind of balance out. So, what does this mean in general? Well, you've got to decide the level of fidelity that you want to, along this spectrum, that you want to work with. So we can see that there are different levels of fidelity. So, you know, we've got things that are just paper-based work. We've got things that are using more stencil kind of system. So it's not freehand drawing, so it looks a little bit more professional. You've got things that actually can be held, so it's more like cardboard prototypes, where these things are now off the paper directly. They're cardboard prototypes, and you've got little tabs which show you what would happen if you pressed a pretend button of them that were drawn. You can have them whereby you can show storyboards, which are really just actual printed pictures of, say, the user interface, and then you see what happens when different things are different buttons are pressed, such as around the Nintendo Multi Miiverse, whereby you have this really very high fidelity looking, low fidelity prototype based in cardboard and paper and pens. You still can see that these things can change quite easily, but it does give you a lot better look and feel for how things would work, and then how things turned out in the end, of course. So the fidelity of the prototype is really something that is specific to the particular project. What you shouldn't do is jump in immediately to a high fidelity prototype, because what that does is make the user very unsure about asking for changes, about telling you things what are wrong. It doesn't also give them an easy way to contribute directly. If you have an initial drawn prototype, you can expect the user to scribble on it, to draw something else on it, to cross something out and add a bit on, and then put that back into the, even into the sort of cardboard, high fidelity, low fidelity prototype phone or Miiverse or whatever the heck it is you're building. That's a critically important thing to consider and to remember. It's the inclusion of the user. Now, as things become more refined, you get to this point where people can see more and more what things are going to look like in the real world, and so they have less to input because they've been a first class member, if you like, as part of the UCD, user centered design team, for that entire time. And so they're then happy because they've seen it go from their input in paper prototypes down the spectrum to a high fidelity prototype. It just depends what level of increments, if you like, of movement you want to do. So you might have quite a lot of different kinds of prototypes getting more and more complex, or you might have just two or three jumps to get to high fidelity prototypes from low fidelity prototypes. It really depends on the kind of work that you're doing. The idea of a mid fidelity prototype, well, it's definitely something that's there, but it's typically more, looks more professional. It's there on an actual printed sheet, typically, because it's easier to go over. However, it looks more professional, and so therefore so what you're really asking for here is confirmation that you're right. You're not asking for people to be in the design process anymore. It's really just, you're pretty certain you're right, you just want confirmation that you're right, and so therefore you've put more effort into putting these screens together, and so now that more effort is rewarded by people just going, yeah, tick box, yes, that's right, that's not right. There are plenty of different tools and bits and pieces that you can software that you can use. So some of these are paper software, like UX cards. So these things, you can sort of have different types of cards, and you can have wireframes on one side and kind of more higher resolution images, etc., on the other type, and you can mix and match and work together with the users to sort of build something up in this way, which is actually much easier and much better for users than trying to do this on a computer. That's why they're so popular. And then you get to a point where you go onto a computer, and at some point that computer will be able to hopefully generate you some output. Okay. Remember that there's also a difference between users, commissioners, and engineers. So prototypes for users are a different thing to prototypes for the engineers and prototypes for the commissioners. The commissioners will probably have a different set of priorities than the users do to some extent. And when I say commissioners, I mean people who are paying for your software. And obviously the software engineers have a different set of priorities too. Now, rapid application development is a term that was used and became really important back in the 90s, but it's still important today. It's not used in such, it's not sort of seen anymore with the agile process and the fidelity of prototypes as being primary, but it used to be and still is relevant. What rapid application development just pretty much says is that once you get to a point where you've got the high fidelity prototype, then you should be able to generate that into something which is a working model. So that working model will then enable you to show to somebody how things would look, how things would work, how things would be controlled in the real world, on a real world application. But typically, there's no program logic behind it yet. And so what this means is that you use what's called the Wizard of Oz system, where generally you are behind the scenes, or somebody is behind the scenes doing the system software part, you know, typing in responses to questions, or, you know, moving pages around, or moving widgets, you know, selecting widgets and stuff, as the user controls the real piece of software, or at least the user interface part of the piece of software, so that you don't have to do all the development, but you can still get some outcomes. And then actually the rapid application development cycle goes all the way to pushing out a fully working prototype, which then just needs polishing. So in summary, you should think that prototypes and rapid application development are conjoined, that sometimes in the current world we don't think about rapid application development because in computer science and technical topics we seem to have a very short memory of what has gone before. But in reality I see these as conjoined. So I see that we've got a spectrum where we go from low fidelity prototype up to rapid application development, and we come through the spectrum of low to mid fidelity prototypes. We then have a high fidelity prototype, which can be something that looks like it's real screens, etc., but doesn't work. And that will allow us to generate something which is partway through the rapid application development cycle, whereby now you've got a working interface, but actually the system logic and the program logic for the system software and the foundations of the program are not there yet, and that's typically controlled by somebody at the back end, sort of Wizard of Ozing the system software. The reason why it's called Wizard of Oz, if you've never seen the film, is that the Wizard of Oz is a giant mechanical wizard to everybody else. But really, it's this guy who's behind the Wizard of Oz controlling it, because the Wizard of Oz is just a great big machine. And so therefore, there's no intelligence, etc. It's just the Wizard of Oz controlling it. And it's the same as you might get in things called, things that used to be popular in the real world, called Mechanical Turks, whereby there would be a mechanical person playing chess, for instance, and it would be, wow, this is ingenious. But really, there'd be somebody in a box controlling that mechanical person doing the playing the chess. So it wouldn't really be, it wouldn't be really something that was created from mechanical input. Okay. And with that, I think we're ready to move on to the actual principles that for each of the different aspects of user experience. And there are four sections now on the principles. Now, these principles are for best practice, so that you can make sure that you capture some of these principles and heuristics when you're giving the information to the software engineers, and they might not have that level of training as to decide or know how to implement these particular parts of the user experience. And with that, I shall see you for the next one.